I have to go upstairs and record something again, so
quiet.
Quiet and do not
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
Hi, you're listening to Pandemic, a new podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Cullum O'Mungoyne, and most days of the week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. The sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat sometimes, as correspondents and I will be recording this, in many cases, on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday, May 28th, and at the time of recording this episode, over 356,000 people have died around the world with COVID-19. Infections stand at over 5.7 million people. Nine more people have died in Ireland, bringing the death toll to 1,640, with 46 more cases today. That brings the total of cases in Ireland to 24,849. On today's episode, we're going to turn again to the issue of nursing homes, which has come into focus today on two points. Firstly, only Canada is ahead of Ireland in terms of the proportion of fatalities that have occurred in residential care settings. Most of those deaths in Ireland have been in nursing homes. Secondly, the Irish Times obtained a breakdown of how many deaths have occurred in individual nursing homes. At a briefing earlier today, the chief executive of the HSE, Paul Reid, acknowledged there is a problem in this area.
My own reflections are that there are obvious gaps in clarity of responsibilities and the overall governance and oversight of private nursing homes in particular. We would work with all of the key stakeholders. We've had great workings with HICWA and Private Nursing Homes Ireland. But I think any reflection at this point in time can say it is something to be looked at. It is a consideration, obviously, for policymakers and not for ourselves and the HSE, but it would seem like an obvious learning to date. And just to say, the residents of these locations are generally frail, obviously elderly, and indeed vulnerable. And I will continuously ensure that the HSE are wide open to any learnings that emerge over the coming while, because we're still very much living with this virus.
Let's just have a look at one specific point made there by Paul Reid.
There are obvious gaps in clarity of responsibilities in the overall governance and oversight of private nursing homes in particular. It is something to be looked at. It is a consideration, obviously, for policymakers and not for ourselves and the HSE.
So the HSE is saying it can't simply change the way it works itself. That has to come from government through the Department of Health. So over to you, Minister, in other words. We're going to get a view on this from SAGE, the Support and Advocacy Service for Vulnerable Older People. But before we get into that, let's talk to our correspondent, Sinead Crowley.
How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Cullum, on this wonderful, wonderfully sunny day.
Yeah, well, as we record this around 3:30 in the afternoon, you're getting ready for today's briefing, heading into that. So we start at the numbers because everything has been put in reasonably optimistic terms. We heard Dr. Cullum Henry, the chief clinical officer of the HSE, yesterday saying COVID-19 had been beaten off the streets, so everybody would think things are going in one direction. But there was a note of concern sounded.
There was. Now, yesterday we were informed that a total of 17 people with COVID-19 had died. And obviously that is a figure much larger than the zero we heard about on Monday. But there was a breakdown of those figures later in the briefing. Dr. Tony Houlihan pointing out, as he has done on other occasions, that that doesn't mean that all those people died in the previous day or the previous 24 hours. Some of them, and we remember them today, as always when reporting on this, some of them had died in the previous 24 hours, but some had gone back further than that. Some deaths hadn't been reported from March. So maybe that jump from 0 to 17 mightn't be as large as, you know, it looked in black and white on paper. However, he did sound a note of caution about hospital admissions. He said last night the ICU admissions was up to 5 and the hospital admissions was up to 15. And that the ICU admissions had been kind of 0-1 that area for the last couple of days. So he said it was too early to identify a trend, but it was somewhat worrying and it was something he would be keeping an eye on. And certainly, I imagine in the briefing tonight, we will be watching with interest to see what the hospital admissions are now in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, and presumably over the next week to 10 days or so, we'll be seeing the impact, or they'll be keeping an eye on what the impact is of the last lifting of restrictions, because we're getting on into that
Exactly, because yeah, because they're still of the opinion that we haven't seen the effect of that yet. So obviously, it was the 18th of May when the restrictions were lifted. Now, I think anecdotally, you could argue that some people lifted them a little bit earlier than that. It was another sunny weekend, so I think you could see more people out in the street and so on, maybe the weekend before. But certainly, as far as the relaxation goes, that was Monday the 18th. So we would still be another few days from seeing the impact of that.
Nursing homes, Sinead, we're going to be talking to Mervyn Taylor of SAGE, the advocacy group for vulnerable older people, later in this episode. But the Irish Times were reporting on figures they've obtained about the breakdown of deaths in certain nursing homes. And there were other figures on nursing homes publicly available today from the Department of Health, was it?
That's right, yeah. This was work done by our colleague Fergal Bowers as well, actually. He spotted this in the Department of Health website, where they have figures of Ireland in comparison with other countries, with a number of other countries. And this was looking at the number of nursing home deaths in comparison with overall deaths, and then comparing that to the situation in other countries. And when that was taken into account, Ireland at 63% was second only to Canada at 81 or 82%, I think, there. So stark figures. Now, it was explained in that report, and again explained by Dr. Colm Henry at the briefing this morning, the HSE briefing, that you have to read those figures quite carefully, because Ireland does report all of the deaths, and it has done a lot of work on reporting deaths in nursing homes. You know, you have to take into account whether the person died in the nursing home or in the hospital, but Ireland does say that it has been very clear in revealing these figures, whereas other countries have different ways of reporting deaths. They, you know, may say if a person has been moved from a nursing home to a hospital, then it's a hospital death. You know, it's a tricky one. So it's not simply a situation of adding up figures there. And Dr. Colm Henry saying that again today, that you have to read those figures with that in mind, that some of it has to do with the reporting structures in various countries as well. But it did still shine a light on the nursing homes issue. And as you say, so did the story in the Times, which gives breakdown figures for various nursing homes around the country. And it is still a very much a live issue. It was at the HSE briefing today, and I've no doubt will be at the Department of Health briefing later today, because obviously the situation did get serious in a lot of those places.
Now, something that's coming into effect today is the mandatory quarantine, or certainly filling out the forms.
Yes.
So explain the system first and what's coming in today, and how that changes things for travellers.
A mandatory form, not yet a mandatory self-isolation, or certainly not at this point, but the form you fill in as soon as you come into Dublin Airport, and you have to give an address of where you're going to be. So this means that if there is a problem, if you are found to be a close contact of a person with COVID, they will know where to find you. And you do have to fill in that form. I mean, there is a fine, there are repercussions if you don't fill it in. You have to give an address. You are then asked to self-isolate for 14 days. Now, that isn't mandatory at this stage. You're
right,
just
so
asked to
self-isolate.
So you won't
be fined or imprisoned if you don't abide by the self-isolation.
Exactly, but you are asked to do it. And worth noting as well, there were several questions to Dr. Tony Houlihan at the briefing last night about, you know, airlines that might be starting back up again and so on. But he very firmly is saying that, look, you're not supposed to be taking non-essential travel now anyway. He was asked at the briefing last night, like, technically, if you lived less than 5 kilometres from an airport, technically you could go away to Spain, but not go down the country, you know. But technically, he says, you're not supposed to be taking non-essential travel anyway. So that was his answer to that. And obviously, Michael O'Leary had said that Ireland's measures were being too strict and so on. But the chief medical officer saying last night that certainly not in his opinion, it was best public advice not to take non-essential travel. And again, that we allow for, you know, people's addresses so they can be contacted. And actually, just on that note, something else very interesting came up at the briefing this morning, the HSE briefing, which is about contact tracing. And as we know, Ireland is doing very full contact tracing. If you were in contact with somebody who was COVID-19 positive, then you are contacted and you are asked to do a test. And what was revealed this morning is that of the people who've been contacted so far, those who subsequently turned out to be positive for COVID-19, many of them were asymptomatic. In fact, I think just 73% of them, three quarters, were asymptomatic.
So it wasn't until they were contacted by the contact
tracers
that they went and got themselves tested. They had no inkling that they were COVID positive.
Exactly. And if you remember, we go back to the 2 hours that we were debating so much last week, and that if you were in a room with somebody for 2 hours, you were considered a close contact. If that's the case, you're then contacted by the HSE to do a test. And the message from Paul Reid to the HSE this morning was very firm. If you're contacted, then please do that test, because lots of people are asymptomatic and they might be sitting at home saying, that's fine, I don't have it. But they're asymptomatic, they don't have it, or indeed they haven't developed it yet.
Right.
So worth doing the test. If you get that text, if you get that contact, you are asked, because obviously this is all about information, and the more information we have on it, the better.
And you mentioned 2 hours there. That was last week's theme. This week's theme
is
2 meters.
2 meters. Yeah, it's all about the twos. Yeah. And we don't, we got, I mean, when I say clarity, we heard again from the chief medical officer last night. He still believes in the 2 meters, very much so. He believes that's the best public health advice. He spoke about droplet spread last night. We got into the detail of heavy droplets and light droplets and how far droplets are spread by various people, whether they're singing or talking or sneezing. And essentially that 2 meters obviously is an extra layer of protection for people. So he still feels that's the public health advice. However, as we know, and as has been widely reported, you know, politicians are debating that at their level. So if they decide to make a change, it will be at that political level, I suppose. But we're not expected to hear anything about that. I think it'll be next week before we hear about that, because next week now we're moving into looking at, will the next phase of the easing of restrictions come in? And it would be expected that, as in tomorrow week, that Friday, we'll hear from Cabinet as to easing of restrictions, and maybe we'll hear more about 2 metres then.
Right. As a parent, what did you make of the news today that, well, I mean, it's not terribly shocking or surprising, but to see it confirmed in black and white, you know it's coming here, don't you? The schools.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Not all going back in September. I have one fellow starting in secondary school and two more going back to primary school. So, well, or not, as the case may be.
I think it has been incredibly tough on them, you know, and I think we will only realise after everything has gone back to so-called normal, how difficult it has been for children. Like, there's some hope now of maybe some summer camps starting, but summer camps, obviously, you have to pay for them and you have to organise them. And, you know, whereas school is something that everybody should have access to. So, yeah, watching that with absolute interest, with my parent hat rather than my journalist hat on even. But I really think, and in fairness, the chief medical officer has said that they are going to think about children and the effect on them. But they really have had a very, very difficult year, because I suppose in comparison with the rest of us, they have no choice, you know, and they can't make any decisions. They have literally just been at home, and that's that. So, yeah, we're all watching that with interest, both the summer camp situation and the education.
Indeed.
As well.
All right. Thanks, Sinead.
Okay.
All the best. Cheers. Thanks a million. Ireland is placed second in the world for the proportion of COVID-19 fatalities that have occurred in residential care facilities. In Canada, as you heard in the last part with Sinead Crowley, 82% of COVID deaths have been in such facilities. In Ireland, the figure is 62%, with most of those dying connected to nursing homes, around 55%. Today's Irish Times published figures showing that more than 1,000 people died in 167 residential settings, with as many as 35 people dying from COVID in the worst affected home. SAGE is a group that advocates for older vulnerable people. Its chief executive, Mervyn Taylor, was in front of the COVID committee in the Dáil Chamber during the week, giving his view on the reforms needed in the nursing home sector. Now, these figures have come out since then, so I've been getting his reaction to today's figures. Mervyn, the story in today's Irish Times listing the number of people that died in nursing homes around the country, what was your reaction to that? Was it a surprise?
I wasn't surprised by it at all. We'd been broadly hearing figures along those lines. There were some, I think, at the worst of the pandemic, there were some stories going around of much worse figures, and we were concerned that some of, you know, it's the old thing of dirt ban lum go dirt ban lay, you know, that nothing was lost in the telling. But these figures broadly, there are a couple that we would have thought would be higher. There are a couple we wouldn't have known about. But I mean, in terms of the ones where there were a large number of deaths, broadly tallies with what we were hearing back on the ground.
And the fact that these figures were obtained by one newspaper, and kudos to the journalists involved who went after those figures, would you think that there's a public interest in these figures being published centrally?
Well, I mean, congratulations to the Irish Times for their investigative journalism. I mean, I wonder why we have to go to such lengths. I would make the point that the same newspaper reported the other morning that HICWA, the regulator, had handed over a list of 200 nursing homes felt to be most at risk to the Department of Health at the beginning of the planning for the pandemic. And I think really the question is, are we going to have to go through the hoops to find out that list? What really worries me is that almost a third of our nursing homes are on a list as being potentially at risk.
In terms of COVID-19 and what we've seen with the proportion of people, the deaths in Ireland that have occurred in nursing homes, what have you made of that? I mean,
our concerns have always been about, and we produced a discussion document on medical care in nursing homes in February of this year, but we've been working on it during 2019. And some of the points that were coming out of that was a concern that maybe the standards of the level of skill of nursing staff in nursing homes had gone down in recent years. Now, so we're simply reflecting what it was being said to us by the clinicians. So that's one thing. And then you have the fact that there is no national framework for GP support of nursing homes, and that has to be negotiated. And then there's a question of who ultimately had clinical responsibility for those nursing homes. And my point would always be that from now on, there needs to be clear clinical links between the private nursing homes and the HSE.
Okay, well, what about the clinical oversight or the clinical governance that you're talking about there? We're in a world at the moment where that's not in place. So what would you see are the problems we have now, particularly in the context of COVID, that would have been addressed by that?
The issue here now is that the best way we feel that we can get linkage between the public health system and social care system and the private outsourced part of our nursing care sector is through community-based consultants who are specialising in the medicine of older people, and that they would have responsibility, clinical responsibility, for nursing homes in each of the new, there are six new regions planned under Sláintecare for the HSE. So that each of those areas, we should start planning that now so that there's a designated consultant or consultants in the medicine of older people who have clinical responsibility for all of those. And they would be supported by advanced nurse practitioners, again, skilled in the care of older people, who would actually work directly with those nursing homes, supporting them, developing the skills and like in a way mentoring them. But also they would be part of the public health nursing structure so that they would be involved in deciding or helping to decide with other professionals and the older people themselves what was appropriate in terms of placement or not in a nursing home. So it's another way of bringing more clinical supports. And in fact, you know, I think the regulation that we've had, the model that we've had, is inadequate.
Well, that's
inspectorate approach is just no longer enough.
So the HICWA, the Health Information and Quality Authority, is the inspectorate approach. And what exactly are they inspecting? And I mean that on the medical side of things.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. I mean, what can you inspect if you don't have anything to inspect it against? And there isn't much to inspect it against. And that's, I think, one of the real issues here is that there wasn't and there haven't been, say, ratios of nurses with the relevant skills to residents set. The phrase used is as appropriate. But I mean, what does that mean? That's wriggle room to the power of 10. If you don't have that ratio and you don't have a statement, you know, a clear standard about the level of medical cover that's available, then you're leaving. And in fact, as came out in the Oireachtas hearings on Tuesday, the level of compliance with infection control was worrying. You have this blind spot in the system.
The clinical governance, if that was in place now, what do you think could have been avoided?
I mean, it's funny, we're in the year 2020. We can all have wonderful vision in hindsight. I think it would have made a difference because there would have been somebody responsible for and who would speak up through the system for that sector that was extremely vulnerable.
They would have been on NPHET, basically, from the outset.
Absolutely.
The HSE lead over all of those
regional clinical governors under Sláintecare.
Yeah, they would have been,
that would have been plugged
exactly.
in from the outset. Is that it?
That's it. And there wouldn't be any struggle for this PPE is for HSE. The PPE is for, I mean, we said from the very beginning, On Call for Ireland was a fantastic response, but it was very poorly used in some cases. But it was not just there for the HSE. People were rallying in the national interest, as it were, and not for a sectoral interest. And this is the problem here, is that we've had sectoral distancing as well as social distancing, sectoral distancing by the fact that we have designed this very poor architecture, dangerous architecture of all these state agencies involved. If we'd had somebody who was responsible for the clinical care in each area, we would be, I think, in a different situation. Now, I would say we would still have had problems with in relation to which a lot of the world had in relation to PPE, in relation to testing. The needs would have been right there at the table. The argument that they would have been best represented by a private nursing home lobby, I find is spurious. The key question is, was there a system of governance addressing this at the NPHET? That's what worries me.
Right. And you're referring there to Nursing Homes Ireland, the lobby group for the private nursing home sector, calling
sure.
for their inclusion on the National Public Health Emergency Team, which didn't happen. But notwithstanding that, take the issue of how long it took to discuss nursing homes first during the month of March.
What did you make of that? The key thing is it took too long. You know, by the time somebody shouts help or we need to do something, then it takes another while for to get the machinery going. And then, there was a lot of talk of boots on the ground, as if somehow you could just take 500 unemployed people and kind of suddenly unemployed people and put them into nursing homes as if anything would do. And it's not like that. It did take a while. But as to why the system didn't react earlier, it was entirely, like so many things in this country, Colm, it is entirely focused on the acute hospital system. And people were absolutely riveted by the fear that we would not have enough ventilators. And if you remember, that was a huge, huge concern. And there was a sort of sense, I think, and this is not trying to make any excuses because I wouldn't attempt to, I think there was a kind of sense that people in nursing homes were actually going to be okay because there were restrictions, etc. And that totally forgot about the fact the people who are most likely to be bringing in COVID were in fact the staff. And that is one of the issues that really has to be addressed. To stop the blame game here, like it was the HSE hospitals done it or somebody else did it. Like the fact of the matter is it was in the community, and who is moving in and out and working across a number of nursing homes and in fact going back and living in congregated living situations. But it was very often the staff, quite frequently lowly paid healthcare assistants. And so, I mean, we need to kind of look at some practical things like that for the future. If you have a vulnerable group of people, you need to kind of think in terms of how are those people cared for and how are the staff cared for and where do they live? Because it's very, very clear that if you have people working across 3 and 4 sites and they're going home to sleep and to cook in a house where there are other people who are working across other care sites and hospitals, you don't need to be an epidemiologist to know you've got a problem.
Right. And finally, then, just this idea of nobody wants to play the blame game. Sure, blame in and of itself doesn't particularly achieve productive results. But often that statement of we don't want a blame game here means these questions are inconvenient. At some point,
sure.
we have to find out what happened. It's not about a public hanging, but responsibility does have to be assigned in order to affect the change, surely.
Yeah, I've been around. I've worked as a residential care worker in London many years ago. My father had MS. I was involved in setting up the MS care centre, and I've been involved in hospice-friendly hospitals. So I've been around the block a bit, Colm, and if I thought that hanging somebody would sort this one out, I would suspend my humanitarian views for an afternoon to allow it to happen. But I don't think...
I meant a metaphorical hanging, but I know what you mean, yeah.
I come back to this simple thing. I don't think that it's going to do any good to say the chief medical officer should have known this. Yes, I think everyone will examine their conscience. What I want is that this is avoided by a clear link being set up now for the future between the state, the public health and social care system, and the bit that it has outsourced and in many ways kind of forgotten about until recently. That's the most important piece. And if that doesn't happen, and we continue to have this argument, I mean, I really am frustrated, and I think it's a terrible distraction to get involved in an unnecessary, you did this and you did that. There are many people dead, some of whom need not have died. And I really want to know that there is now going to be clear linkages and answerability within the public health system and social care system, and oversight of the, there has to be clearer clinical oversight of the private nursing home sector.
All right. Thanks, Mervyn.
Okay, Colm.
And that's all for this episode of Pandemic. We're back tomorrow with more. In the meantime, do get in contact with suggestions or questions by email to colm.omongain@rte.ie. That's colm.omongain@rte.ie, or on Twitter @ColmOmongain. Do subscribe through your usual podcast platform to get this podcast regularly. Reviews are welcome, and of course, nice reviews even more welcome. So until tomorrow, take care. Slán. So